Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays. That's right. This is a Sunday, 7 a.m., 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. And I'm going to work on getting into the vernaculars so that everybody understands what the heck I'm saying. The podcasts are available at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, SoundCloud, and iTunes. We are now also on Facebook, and I will try to stay diligent and keep you posted on what's going on through Facebook. Might even incorporate Twitter. I'm hoping there's a way to link the two so I can use Twitter to go to Facebook to let you know about SoundCloud and iTunes and all of the other good stuff. But the social media thing, it's not necessarily new to me in the respect that I've known about it for a decade or more. It's new to me because I'm just now diving into it. Today's program is timely and timed, so to speak, to the period in which we are in. St. Patrick's Day weekend and all of that fun stuff as an Irish person. Unfortunately, only 10% according to my DNA test. but I'll take it. My wife is over 80%, so, you know, I'll let her carry me in that regard. With us in studio, though, today for a visit that we have not had in a long, long time, Beth McDonald. And you are, it's hard for me to break down your title, but you work with primarily with businesses and corporations and so forth to assist them through their processes.
Absolutely.
What is your actual title?
Well, my title is corporate astrologer, corporate intuitive, business astrologer, business intuitive. I also am a death midwife. I help people pass. I help people cross over. I do a lot of work with the conscious living, conscious dying community. And
is that new? Is that something that's been added to your repertoire in the last few years?
No, I think it's something where I'm sort of just come out of the proverbial closet with it. One of the things that happens for me is people call me because they've got a problem. We solve the problem, we get them out of crisis, we get them into strategy and moving forward and goal setting and achievement and stuff like that. And then I become part of the family. Mm-hmm. And then when things happen, like the matriarch or the patriarch gets a diagnosis and someone's going to be making their transition, then because they know me and they trust me, I'm often the first person they call, and then I help them connect with resources.
That's a subject I'd like to get into. We'll do
absolutely.
That maybe a little later, because that fascinates
That's a whole
me.
Other show.
Oh, it really is. It really is.
It really is.
But I'm curious, going back to the other aspects of dealing with corporations
right,
with astrology
right,
and intuition and so forth, is that is something that is being more and more accepted within the business community?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. Well, and if you think about it, it has been a part of mankind's communities since we lived in caves.
Yeah, but
you know,
business
since we
doesn't
first
go into the esoteric. They're in the practical, the tangible, the
well,
bottom line.
That's what white America did with it.
Ah.
That's what white Europeans did with it.
Okay.
In aboriginal cultures, in ancient cultures, there was never a separation. And in Buddhism, there still isn't.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Livelihood.
Yeah.
Using your career, your business, your means of supporting yourself materially in the world, it's a reflection of and an expression of your spirituality. It doesn't have to be separate. It's only separate if you make it so. Mm. And it's generally considered to be rather unhealthy to do so.
Yeah,
it's and kind of so to me, I don't think it's that there's this massive change. I think a lot of people who are awake or are waking up are kind of returning to best practices.
I like that. And it's interesting because the first one of the thoughts that came to my mind was kind of like organized religion.
Right.
They've had the separation between man and God, and there never has been and never will be. Very interesting. I'm curious as to, I would venture that as far as that's concerned, that it's they consult you on virtually every aspect
Everything.
Of the business from
Just,
one end to the other, A to Z?
And that Venn diagram place in the middle where it where your personal and your business overlap, like things like you and I have talked about, trying to take a vacation without leaving your business, your boss, your business stranded, your underlings, figuring out the best time and way to retire, how to manage things when a personal event like your a parent or a beloved child getting some sort of awful diagnosis, you know, having to figure out how do I balance my job and the needs of my employer or my workplace, my business, with the needs of my family. A lot of it has really, a lot of it's really born out of the struggle that the average human has trying to have what they call work-life balance. How do I, and how do I create it authentically where it's a reflection of me personally? And that's where the astrological piece, I think, comes in really handy because it helps us customize.
I can say that technology helped me in 2016 when I went on my first vacation with my wife in 10 years that, not that I wanted to, but I was able to stay connected. So there wasn't a complete separation. And that was the whole balance there between work and vacation, or work at personal and so to speak, public.
And that's what just gets so crazy for me. Our culture is so unhealthy that way. You know, Europeans, 6 weeks of vacation, no cell phones, no, you know, I have to check. I have to get back to them. You know, you're on vacation. You're on vacation. You know, they really invest more in their people and in people's well-being so that there's more breath. There's more room. There's more freedom. This is what fascinates me. Freedom is a massive value. For Americans, like every culture has their own core values, and Americans value freedom. And a lot of the conversation that businesses are having and governments, I do a lot of work for civil servants and politicians and things like that. How do we put the freedom really back in our culture in a way that has meaning for our people? Our people would love to be able to have a day off. Our people would love to have a sick day, you know, and most of us don't. Even here in Santa Barbara, the survival issues are so massive. Like most of the people, I was at a presentation a while back from the Housing Authority in the for the city of Santa Barbara, and it's over 50%. I think it was between 60% and 70%, and it's over 50. I don't remember the exact number, but the number of people who live in the city limits of Santa Barbara who qualify for housing assistance that we don't have is staggering. It's over 50%. You know, we don't have living wages here. We don't have the things that people need to feel free. You know, we don't have the safety, the security of wages, housing, food, basic stuff. And so I work a lot with companies and politicians who are actively, consciously trying to fix it.
And there's another element, too. Well, it's not another element, but sort of another dynamic, and that is that during the horrific times at the turn of the year, going from the Thomas fire to the mudslides, we had a group of people who couldn't get to their jobs, and then we had a group of people who could, but they were over, I want to say overburdened, because they had to pick up the slack from those people who couldn't get there.
This was, you know, such a revelatory moment for us. And I know it's going to take us a while to figure it all out because that's normal. That's what happens. But in terms of civic planning, civil planning, we kind of had an epic fail. You know,
we did have some creativity pop in.
And that always happens. And what we know, all innovation is born out of crisis, right? That's why crisis managers are so, like, a definition of crisis, literally, if you look it up, is something you didn't see coming. You know, something you didn't plan for, especially because there were warning signs. And you were like, oh, this should be good enough. Should. Should is a really scary word. Should is a really scary word. So, you know, I'm actively working with a lot of the different sectors of the community that are trying to figure this out, pick up the pieces. Yeah. And part of it has to do with exactly that. There's one artery in and out of town.
Yeah.
And if something happens, or God forbid, like we had happen, the south part was closed. And then for what, half a day?
Yeah.
The north part was also closed because that gasoline truck, you know, and for 20 minutes, we were an island here.
Yeah.
That was a moment. People were like, nobody ever imagined that could happen to the degree to which we actually planned for it.
Yeah.
And so now we know, you know, now we know, and now we're planning, and it's awesome, you know, but it's this is going to take time.
Yeah.
The one thing I keep telling people is it's going to take time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of emotion in it. Yeah. And there's a lot of places in the community who are actively helping people understand.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing sacrifice, amazing contributions.
Right.
A willingness to give.
Right.
With virtually, and in a way, it's with virtually nothing to gain in return, but
right.
the reality is on a subconscious level, you have everything to gain in return, and that being your community.
Yeah.
That's what we have to gain by, you know, putting it out there. And of course, that's one of the lessons I learned many years ago. Every time, you know, I would hear about a downturn in a particular business or an industry or what have you, and I remember a lot of my intuitive guests would talk about how the last thing you want to do when there is contraction in whatever is to contract.
Right.
That's when you want to expand.
Breathe.
Exactly.
Just breathe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, breathe and expand
as much
as you can.
And now is the time we need to do just that. We need to expand.
In as much as we can in a variety of different ways and areas.
Yeah.
And
let's talk a little bit about one of those things that is upon us.
Yeah.
In the next couple of days, we have spring will be sprung. Probably here on the Central Coast, not so much maybe back east, because there's still probably piles of snow that they're dealing with. But it's not just the weather transition, but it all that weather transition and that whole demarcation, if you will, from winter to spring. We're coming out of hibernation. And now we're getting ready for that expansion, that growth.
Absolutely. You know, we're staring down the barrel of the spring equinox. That's Tuesday, the 20th. The sun moves from Pisces into Aries, and the day and the night are of roughly equal length.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of two times of the year that that happens. And it's really, I think, a moment of balance. It's frequently a moment of clarity where suddenly you know what to do with some of the puzzle pieces you're holding so that you can take the next steps. It's an extraordinary moment in the wheel of the year.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously we go through the cycle every year.
Yeah.
I'm still looking to the powers that be to get rid of this time change business because the plants and the animals don't care. And it's just annoying to have to deal with the clock, for one. I don't mind having a little darkness when I go home or leave it the way it is, like we've just transitioned. I don't know. I always have trouble with this.
Well,
are we in daylight saving time in the spring and summer and early autumn, or are we in standard time in spring and summer and early autumn?
Because
I like those times.
I use this as an opportunity for listening.
Yeah.
You know, one of the hardest things I think about being a human is being still and quiet and calm. And just like Yoda says in the Star Wars movies, it's like, reach out with your feelings.
Mm.
You know, shut your head off. Just shut it off and shut up and listen and then feel. And then what does it feel like? Is it yummy? Why? Say thank you. I'll take some more of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's not yummy, what do I need to breathe in, breathe out, breathe into to make it more yummy?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can't make it much more yummy right away, but you can always shift it just a little bit, and often just like stillness and quiet and taking a breath, looking out the window. I was looking up just a minute ago, and the most gorgeous big cat just walked along the top of the fence there. It was spectacular. Very handsome.
We have lots of wildlife roaming outside the building. Thank
yeah,
you.
It's up. Well,
we have some weird wildlife wandering inside the building, but
that's another topic. Yeah. I think all buildings have that.
It sounds to me, too, like what you're just talking about would apply greatly to another event that's coming up a day or two.
Oh, dear Lord. Yeah. That's going to take it to the next level. On Thursday the 22nd, Mercury goes retrograde. It retrogrades at 16 degrees Aries. It'll stay the whole time in the sign of Aries, which is a really complicated place, I think, for Mercury to be retrograde.
Okay, before you elucidate on that, describe to me or define the word retrograde. What does that mean?
It's from the Latin, and I don't speak Latin.
I understand.
Well, so I'm going to slaughter the pronunciation of this. I believe it's retrogradus or retrogradir, mm-hmm. depending on the conjugation. Mm-hmm. But it means to step backwards. Now, the ancients, without the aids of telescopes, noticed that in the course of the year, Mercury appeared to stand still in its orbit and then go backwards. It does not actually go backwards. This is the epic bit for me. This is one of the things I love about astronomy. All the planets go retrograde or appear to, but once we got modern technology and telescopes, we realize that it's an optical illusion.
That's what
they
I was
don't
wondering, yeah.
actually go backwards, but it sure looks like it.
Okay.
And during that time, the ancients noticed that whatever that planet seemed to rule seemed to have greater trouble, greater difficulty, breakdowns, blow-ups, meltdowns during that particular time. Now, Mercury rules communication, how we think, how we speak, how we perceive reality. And so if our perception breaks down, there's a lot of opportunity there on a bad day, in a bad moment, when we're not feeling good, when we're not feeling connected. It can look and feel for all the world like an epic fail. But if you breathe, slow down, stop talking, stop thinking, listen, it's a massive moment for connection and reframing. For me, the Mercury retrogrades always highlight the difference between our will and God's will. You know, where we get an idea in our head and we're off and running and we think it's great, and God or the universe or whatever you call it, the force, is just like, oh no, honey, that's great. You get points, but I need you over here, and I need you to be doing this. This is really the priority. It's really, for me, it feels like getting your tires aligned in the car, where it's like, oh, suddenly it's not shaking and I can drive straight. But you have to be able to slow down and shut up and listen.
It's like the old phrase, you plan, God laughs.
Yeah. But it's deeper than that for me. It's so much... You have to be so careful because humans are so fragile. And what the retrograde always reveals for me is how fragile we all are, especially about matters of the heart, especially about the people we love and the things we love and care deeply about. And I always invite people to kind of get beyond the fear and the freak out and get more into breathy Buddhism and just trust. You know, there's an aspect of Buddhism that's about the divinity of all things. There's a huge element of surrender where it's like, okay, I'm not getting what I want, or I'm not having the moment I'd like to be having, but some people believe there's a divinity in everything. And if there is a divinity in everything, let's do a thought experiment. What would be the divinity in this moment where I'm all stressed and struggling because I'm not getting what I want, or it's not going the way I think I should? If there's a divinity in the way this is going, what could it be? Maybe not even what is it, but what could it be? Let's make a list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that we've talked many times over the years as we have approached or have been in the midst of a retrograde, that it is, again, and it, I mean, you've really gone through a rather wonderful, detailed aspect of how to handle it. But the one word we've always used is it's time to observe.
Observe and listen. Listen and observe. Yeah. And observe, as the late George Michael said, listen without prejudice. You know, don't pathologize, don't judge it, don't make it good or bad.
It is
just
what it
observe
is. Yeah.
And trust. Well, also, it's so much bigger than that. If there is a divinity there, and we know that's there somewhere, if there's a grace, if there's, you know, in gratitude practice, it, let's use that parlance, there's always something to be grateful for in every moment. And it's like, okay, if I'm not getting what I want, or if this is stressful and weird, what is there for me, you know, in terms of grace and graciousness? What's good? What's right? What's working?
Because a lot of times when you're in the other, on the other side of that, you are, obviously it's coming from a place of fear, but even more so it's when you're not being grateful, you're in a place of, there's not enough. You know, I'm looking for something more.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, hey, I don't need any more. What I have is,
right.
I'm warm, I'm dry, I'm clothed, I'm fed, et cetera,
I'm loved.
I'm loved.
That's the thing most people can't get. And I can't emphasize that enough. It's not just material needs.
Right.
It's, you know, of course, be grateful for those things.
Sure.
But also put love on the list. We all have moments where we don't feel like there's enough love or sustenance, emotional, spiritual nourishment. And we don't just get that from other humans.
Yeah.
And there's always more out there from the humans than we can see or feel or know at any given moment.
I've always believed that there is more than enough of everything for everybody. And I remember that it was sort of delineated a little bit more by someone who said that, and not everybody wants the same thing. So it's not like we're going to deplete, whether it's material things or love, for that matter.
Right.
And so we need to just, you know, let go of that aspect of it, and just again, be grateful for the moment that we're in and the fact that we're still here, we're still alive, we're breathing, that we have relationships in our lives at all the various levels. I mean, I just had a wonderful conversation with my parents. They're in their mid-late 80s now.
Oh, right.
And they're on Facebook, and I had posted a picture, and they had commented. I thought, oh, wow, that's right. My folks are on Facebook, too. And, of course, I, as I said, I made the commitment that I'm only going to friend people who I actually know, because I had one gentleman who told me, said that I was at a restaurant with my wife, and this person walked up to me and says, oh, hey, we're friends on Facebook. And he didn't know who this guy was.
Yeah.
But he and they had, they'd friended each other, and it kind of freaked him out. You know, and it's not that I have, I'm being antisocial. It's just, you know, I don't know you. How can I mean, I want to be your friend. And it's kind of like, okay, so how do you get to know somebody through the internet like that? I mean, it's a whole nother subject, but
right.
It's one of those things where our technology, in one sense, has sort of outpaced our ability to connect as a community, you know, and it actually sort of has created a, do I want to say a subculture of some sort, where, you know, you have this list of, I mean, people get really prideful over having hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of friends. How many of those people do you really know? You know, are you just doing it out of habit? You're just clicking the button because you want to, you know, want your numbers to go up.
What I really find helpful during the Mercury retrograde is to kind of step away from the machines.
Can you take my phone, please?
Yeah, take my phone, turn it off. Yeah, step away from the machines, and especially now in a community like ours that is still finding our way through this crisis, and participate in more community events, fairs, festivals, community meetings, healing services, especially, and I have to plug this because I really love these people and I believe in them. Hospice on the Riviera, Hospice of Santa, which is Hospice of Santa Barbara, Hospice and Visiting Nurses, and then the Shared Crossing Project, Life Chronicles. Any of these organizations that deal with heavy-duty topics, they don't just deal with death and dying. Death and dying teaches us about living. And we aren't really, you know, our generation, Richard, you and I, were peers. You know, we were kind of sheltered from our humanity in ways that our parents' generation and their parents' generations weren't. And so then I think it's given a lot of us, and certainly our children, a skewed perspective on what life really is. And it's not having a million friends on Facebook. It's about having a handful of friends who'll sit by your bedside when you're sick. Or like I had a back injury this last year, and I had a couple of friends who were golden. They came over and they did some shopping for me, and they helped take the load off my poor husband because, you know, I couldn't walk for 2 weeks. I couldn't walk. And so, you know, having friends that have your back and having friends that you will drop everything to be there for. You know, these Mercury retrograde moments are really a time to take stock, listen, and take stock, and then identify who are the people that you really want to know matter. Tell them.
I know that when my wife went through her procedures over the last few years, she had people that, you know, would come over to the hospital and visit her that she would never have thought would have. But
it's always such a surprise, isn't it?
Even the people that she works with, and the, even the doctor that she works with, has shown such. I mean, you wouldn't think that knowing the general stereotypical attitude of a cardiologist, that that would come out of this guy, and yet that's what the such compassion and understanding was, just incredible.
And care. And thank you. And that's when your good deeds come back to you. Those moments are always so telling for me. It's like a harvest. And it happened for me during the harvest season, August, September, October. It was fast. It was a fascinating harvest season for me.
Well, the other interesting thing, too, as you've described this, it seems to me like the ability for us, when talking about retrograde, to, again, put a different spin on it. I know that years ago, when I used to sort of follow, not actively, but just I was aware of some of the terminology when I would talk with astrologers and so forth, and they would talk about Mercury, Mercury in retrograde, what have you. And it's not the only planet that goes retrograde, but it was such, they would speak about it almost with such trepidation. There was such a calamity coming, and on and on and on and on. And it's like, you know, maybe we should come up with another word, because retrograde is so negatively charged. Well, I also think it's possible to change the charge.
And that's the commitment that I think a lot of people in the world, and especially America, are. It's the awakening we're all having right now. America is a nation of panics, man. We freak out. There's we don't value critical thinking. We don't value the grown-up in the room. You know, we don't value, we just realized the places where we kind of maybe got off on a tricky track. And these retrogrades are a classic example of that, and an opportunity to not only reframe the conversation, but revamp our culture maybe a little bit. You know, again, sometimes we value freedom in kind of some interesting ways. You know, we value the freedom to do whatever we want, whenever we want, even if it's not healthy. And, you know, I think a lot of us are kind of rethinking that.
And not healthy, not just for us as individuals, but
also for the culture.
Our community.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we take our break, first of all, I want people to be able to get in touch with you. You have a website. It is still BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Absolutely.
You have a newsletter that you put out people can subscribe to.
Yes.
And you also, do you list various events and things of that nature that are going on?
I have a page on my site under the resources tab mm-hmm. where I list all the planetary retrogrades for each year and going back several years, and the same for the eclipses okay. because I think the eclipses are equally powerful.
Oh yeah. We've had some incredible
last 2
astronomical
years. Dear Lord. Yeah.
I mean January, setting aside what happened on the ground, in the sky,
January,
we had
February
two
eclipses.
We had 2 full moons.
Yeah.
As well as an eclipse.
Yeah.
But February, am I correct? February did not have a full moon.
Well, February
because January
had,
31st
had them both.
Had them both.
Yeah.
And then the next one wasn't until, what was it, March something?
Yeah. The tricky part for us is that we don't follow a lunar calendar.
Right. Yeah.
The Gregorian calendar forces us to have moments like that. It's mm-hmm. not uncommon.
It
does happen from time to time, but boy, when it happens, we know it, don't we?
Yeah, and for some reason, we make a big deal of it, whereas if we were on a lunar calendar, no big deal.
Yeah.
But the eclipses and those kinds of things, and I still, as a matter of fact, it comes back to mind, I wasn't able to get outside to watch it when it transferred,
right.
What little we got to see here in Santa Barbara. But what was kind of cool, because of technology,
right.
I was looking at TV, and
right.
they would move from one time
right.
zone to the next. I got to see it over and over and over again.
It was kind of cool.
It really was.
Yeah.
And so you got to experience it. And, of course, people said, well, there's nothing like being in person. Well, I'm on the planet. Isn't that close enough to being in person?
Well, and sometimes we do have things that need to happen. For me, because the eclipses always reveal something. It's the interplay of shadow and light.
Yeah.
People always find out something.
Yeah.
And often something that may be difficult to assimilate during the eclipses. And for that, was it the ones that were in the summer, July, mm-hmm. August?
Yeah.
For the one big one,
yeah.
I was on the phone talking people down off the skinny branches. It's like, yes, I am experiencing the eclipse. Thank you very much. I'm not outside seeing it. Yeah. I am seeing it from the inside
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
The effects thereof. So people can go to BethMcDonaldConsulting.com, get more information, and they can contact you, well, locally or otherwise, via the phone. And if I'm remembering, it's, was it 963-8426?
0842. 805-963-0842.
0842. Okay. Very good. Well, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to continue talking, because I want to then get into, you made reference to the divine earlier, and we're going to kind of get into that, because we're also transitioning into a period of time that a lot of people consider to be a rather divine time of the year. And we'll do that here with Beth McDonald of Beth McDonald Consulting. Go to BethMcDonaldConsulting.com to find out more. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you. Oh, won't you walk with me?
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Beth McDonald, and we are talking about, of course, the transitions that we have been passing through, or going to be passing through next week, the 21st, or actually the 20th, and then the 22nd. But we also have a time of year. I have to say that I, as a kid growing up, of course, it was filled with Easter eggs and that kind of thing. But as I got older and in my first marriage, and I was associating and attending Byzantine Catholic Church, and they had wonderful ritual and ceremony in that regard, and they had incredible food to eat. I mean, I can still remember the wonderful bread. It was called Pascha, sweet bread. Oh, it was wonderful. And my mother-in-law used to make big, giant loafs of it and have a cross. They had a cross that was on top as well. And you'd put this basket full of food in on a table in the rectory or in the communal hall. And then the priests would come over and they would bless the baskets. And then everybody would gather around and eat their food and commune together and have a wonderful time. Easter is Easter and Passover. Am I correct? Is that right? Passover is around the same period, or am I mixing time zones?
This year, it's all happening at one point in time. Good Friday is Friday, March 30th.
Okay.
Passover is also that weekend. Then Easter Sunday is April 1st, and there's a big, fat, full moon in Libra on the evening of, or actually the wee hours of the morning on Saturday the 31st. And so for people who are particularly interested in prayer, meditation, rituals, ceremony, services, you know, a lot of us don't feel like we do those things as much as we want to.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I do with people is just acknowledge that. Don't guilt and shame yourself about it, but pick a day.
Yeah.
You know, pick a day. The full moons, the new moons are always really massive times.
Yeah.
But when you've got a trifecta like this, where you've got the Mercury retrograde, you've got a full moon, and you've got these high holy days.
Yeah.
You get more, make it a point, even if it's just 10 minutes, even if it's just 5 minutes.
Yeah. I know, too, that that one of the jokes by priests would be that the only time most people come to church is to be hatched, matched, or dispatched.
Right, 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 you know, right.
And then maybe some of the holy days during the year, like Christmas and Easter and so forth.
Yeah, we used to call it ECT, Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving, or ETC, something like that,
And I have been to only one or two sunrise services, but my God, those are spectacular. If it's clear and you see the sun coming up as the service is unfolding, I can only imagine. I know that, for example, there are certain places around the world where buildings have been built in such a way as when it's usually the winter and summer equinoxes or solstices, that the sun comes blazing through the front door, so to speak. I'm not sure if that's so much on
the passage. Yeah, there are in the Boyne Valley. I've been there. I've been to Newgrange, which was one that was open.
Spectacular.
And this was in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Noth and Douth. I don't remember which one is which, but one of them is aligned to the spring equinox and one of them is aligned to the fall. And but they were not open.
Yeah.
I have at the time. I have heard since that they are. So it's kind of on my bucket list.
And one of the things that they've changed, which I have mixed feelings about. When we went to Newgrange in 2004, and we went down into the chamber, they told us that we were not allowed to take photographs, a video, audio recordings, or anything of that nature, and yet. Now they actually have a video you can watch of somebody going down inside and so on and so forth. Now, maybe they made an exception for that one video that could be shown to people. And I thought, when I remember
it's
hearing
brilliant.
This, I was thinking, that's to me the height of respect
Absolutely.
To the ancestors who built this because it was built. And the acoustics in that place, when we were down there, were just they were incredible. It wasn't hollow. It wasn't dead. It was like it was alive.
It was a living thing.
It really
was magical.
It really was. It was incredible. But we have these high holy days for Christians. Obviously, the death, burial, and resurrection, a crucifixion, death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, and Passover for the Jews. I'm sure that there are other philosophies, if you will, that have similar types of events that are going to be taking place around the same general time, the transition of March and April.
Yeah, one of the things I really recommend for people in the community is to get on the mailing lists of some of these different churches, organizations that do healing events and specialty services, especially if you're like me. I am not a Sunday go to church kind of a girl, but I do love ceremonies and services.
Same
and
here,
some
yeah.
of the most powerful moments I've had as an adult spiritually have come at some of these things.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorites is sometimes Unity does it and sometimes the Interfaith Council does it. But on like the Tuesday or Wednesday before Thanksgiving, they'll do a service that's just about gratitude. And I have had such profound experiences there. And then Unity used to do this spectacular Maundy Thursday service, which is the Thursday before Good Friday, and they would wash your hands instead of washing everybody's feet. It was, but I had a really profound, like, life-changing experience during one of those things. And there's a lot of that out here, especially now. There's more going on because there's a greater need. Mm-hmm. And
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
In your estimation, and especially, let's say, in the work that you do with people, uh-huh. and assisting them.
Yeah.
How do you see these types of events affecting the psyche or even the heart, for that matter, in terms of the participating in these kinds of rituals, these kinds of ceremonies? What does that do for the individual, let alone the community itself?
Right. I think these kinds of ceremonies and services force us to slow down and stop talking and listen. And not just listen to the person or the people who are leading the ceremony or the glorious music that's a part of it, but to really, in that calm stillness, in kind of a safe place, a much safer place, because group energy is so much stronger than solo energy. Mm-hmm. And it kind of gives you a much stronger container for that heart chakra to open a little further. You know, the heart chakra, they say, mm-hmm. in Aboriginal cultures, is the hardest chakra to keep open, and it's the hardest one to heal once it's shut down. And so I think one of the glorious things about these tragedies and then these healing services is that it gives the more damaged or the more unconscious or both of us a safer place to begin to put a toe in the water. Mm. And just to, there's that cat.
There he goes.
He says amen.
He's interested in something that's going on in here.
Yeah. No, but it's you know, it's always a very personal journey, whatever our individual journey is. But in my networking with other healers and ministers and change agents in the communities, one of the things we're all seeing is that people who didn't know they were affected, maybe they didn't live in a disaster area, maybe they didn't have to evacuate, they were still impacted. They didn't realize. You know it's real when you've got the big John Wayne types crying on your couch because they're upset and they finally can't keep it in anymore.
Yeah.
And then they didn't even realize that they had some variation of post-traumatic stress. They didn't even realize they could get it, much less that they had it, much less what it looks like. And so what I'm telling everybody right now is just assume you've got a bit of it, as does everybody else around you, especially the driver in front of you where they're making a spectacular left-hand turn from the right-hand lane. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an awful lot of that going on. And so just, you know, slow down and listen and be as compassionate as you can with yourself and everybody else.
And know that if that kind of thing happens, that it's not personal.
It is not personal.
I was shared this not long ago where, because I was having problems with that whole aspect.
Right, right.
And someone said to me, says, well, Richard, what you need to grasp and understand is that Joe Billingsley in that red SUV did not wake up this morning saying, I'm going to text everybody, let's get Richard.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
No.
And in a way, that's even worse because it's so impersonal. It's like it would have been better if they had, because at least I knew they were thinking about me. But
yeah, and that's one of the most magical things I think about post-traumatic stress is it holds up, and a retrograde is that it holds up a really big mirror. And it shows you where you are overreacting.
Yeah.
And it shows you why.
Yeah.
You know, we're all struggling with that sense of separateness from God, from other. And it shows us where we are as yet still struggling.
And I figure maybe if you can't get to that point, just consider, are you willing to go through the paperwork? Okay. Back off and just relax.
Yeah, it serves no one or nothing. You know, how we spend our time tells a story.
Yeah.
How we spend our time reflects our values. Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is maybe even evaluating it from this standpoint. You know, you talk about, you know, getting a handle on why we're doing what we're doing and understanding. I mean, that's one of the things that we've talked about in the past year or so on this program, on and off, is the whole aspect of knowing self. I mean, you've been talking throughout the program about going inward and listening.
Really listening.
That's part of knowing who we are. And that's very important, because if we don't know who we are, how are we going to share this person with another person? And how are we going to understand, as you were saying before, why we're doing what we're doing? And wouldn't it be better, let's just say, if I could avoid a calamity by backing off, how much more is that going to teach me about myself? And someone said, well, yeah, but, you know, if you get into that calamity, you're going to learn a whole lot more. Well, yeah, but there's also a lot of other
ways
physical
to
injuries.
Learn.
There's other ways
there
to
are,
learn.
There are healthier, smarter ways to learn. Yeah. And again, you choose, and that choice reflects your values.
Yeah. Learning about self is, and these times in which we are in.
Demand it.
They really do.
It's not an option anymore.
But
I
also,
think that's why people are so miserable. It's like there's no more rope left on the tether. It's like we've got to figure out how to do this.
Yeah, the cat is not hanging on 10 feet above the end of the rope. It's at the end.
It's, yeah.
All right. And we have to, and yet at the same time, and I've shared this before with the story of our coming to Santa Barbara, this whole aspect of when you come to the edge of a cliff, as I have learned over the years, you do two things. You jump and you trust. Well, if you're hanging by a thread, let go and trust, you know, and try to get to that space where you can start believing. And again, being grateful for where you are and what you have and the people that are in your life and the fact that you are breathing in and out that air. And you're still able to do the things that you do. You can still contribute to your own life and the lives of others around you.
Yeah.
That gratitude, I don't know, the gratitude part just seems to be, you know, really key. But I'm also curious as your observations of forgiveness.
Oh, my gosh. I was just at that Gary Malkin workshop yesterday at hospice, visiting nurses and hospice. Mm-hmm. And it was about music. With the living and the dying and using different kinds of music in the death window to create greater harmony for the person dying, but also to help the families move through some of their old history that kind of gets in the way.
Yeah.
The death window is the most powerful window for healing and transformation that there is. But two things tend to happen. Either they're fighting over the will and the estate, or they're too mad at each other to even be there and take advantage of this glorious moment. So there's a lot of innovation happening in the industry right now about how do we do that? How do we help families who, for whatever reason, haven't figured it out until now, not miss the boat? And so I was at that workshop and this forgiveness concept came up, and we were talking about what misconceptions there are about forgiveness. People think they can just decide to forgive. Mm-hmm. And in a rare percentage of situations, that is actually how that works. But forgiveness is really a byproduct of you letting go of whatever your hurt, your fear, your anger, whatever grievances you have. And it's real deep work, and it's not easy work. It's why forgiveness is so hard.
Yeah.
It's why so many people say, I'll never forgive that, or it's unforgivable, you know? And what they're really saying is, I can't go there.
Yeah.
I do not have the capacity, the willingness, the ability to go deep and really look at that pain.
Yeah.
And give it the time and attention it deserves to release it, transform it, transmute it, turn that lead into gold, to do the alchemy so that then you can live, you can not only forgive the person and yourself for your part in it, because you've always got a part in it,
right,
but you can live more free.
Well, now, let me ask you something. All right, forgiveness, you say, it's not an easy process.
No.
Okay. Is there a way that we can avoid having to forgive? In other words, is there a process prior to
the not screwing up process?
The need to forgive. Okay.
Yeah.
You see what
I'm
saying?
Yeah.
It's kind of like what we were talking about before about calamity.
Well,
you know, there are other ways of learning rather than going through
preventative.
Calamity. Preventative. Is there a way to...
Yeah. Well, and there's a couple of things. Like this is a problem that religions and governments have been trying to solve since humans first started walking upright and banding together for mutual survival. Mm-hmm. It's a weird Venn diagram intersection of emotional, material, economic stuff. But, you know, there's a variety of different modalities and methods and philosophies and schools of thought. One of the things I keep coming back to is, again, from Tibetan Buddhism. There was a period of time, and I've heard different people say different things. I haven't done the research on this. I've heard some people say like 500 years, others 700, others 1,000. But because the culture was so focused on two things, one of them was daily spiritual discipline, and the other was a fierce commitment to the concept of karma, like what you do will always come back to you. Between those two things, the majority of the communities in what is now Tibet for a long freaking time did not have standing armies or police forces because people just conducted themselves in a more mindful, righteous way.
Okay.
And I have long been inspired by that.
Yeah. The reason I ask the question is because the passage that, quoting Jesus about forgiveness, was asked the question, how many times should we forgive people? Seven times? He says, no. Seven times 70.
Yeah.
And it's like, if it's that hard to forgive, I don't know that I could do seven times 70 or 490.
That's, I think it's the spiral concept.
Yeah.
You know, we all have...
Sort of like once you start...
Well, you never get all of it, right?
Yeah.
You suffer an event and you feel wounded by a person and an event, and you work out part of it, the part you can access, and you feel a little better.
Yeah.
And you may forgive a little bit. And then you go on your way and something else happens and you realize, oh, there's another chunk that's ready to be attended to. And I think that's what's so scary to people about the retrogrades and
kinda
the eclipses.
Like peeling the onion.
It's totally peeling the onion, but you don't have control.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in control of like, that's, I think, the hardest thing about, especially in a situation like this where the retrogrades, the retrograde of Mercury is happening so hard on the heels of those two eclipses. The eclipses reveal, the retrogrades confront. Ow.
Yeah.
So what I tell people during this particular time is budget for this. Leave time in your schedule during this. Technically, it's like a 9-week period. Mm. It's the 3-week prelude period, then about the 3 weeks of the actual Mercury retrograde, and then the 3-week shadow period on the downside. It's a bell curve. Mm. And if you can, you know, underschedule and leave time and make it a point to try something different, yoga or Tai Chi or go to a different church service or
I'm canceling all my appointments for 9 weeks.
Yeah, because we can totally afford to do that.
Right.
Yeah, and you're going into your bunker under the house,
that's
right?
That's it right there.
Yeah, that's your strategy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
First of all, it's really nice to have you back in studio.
Thank you so much.
Program.
It's great to be here.
And I always love having people in studio because obviously the interaction
is
terrific.
Yeah.
We've got some great stuff coming up that we've talked about here on the program. And you can elucidate further on that with our listeners by them going to your website, which is BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. We still have the link up on the website.
Awesome.
And we still have the link up to the audio segments that you did several years back.
Oh, for so long.
For so long.
Yeah.
And who knows? We might resurrect that in some fashion. New stuff. We won't play the old stuff over again. But maybe we'll talk about that down the road because that would be nice to reincorporate that into the program.
Right.
And again, I thank you so much for sharing this time with us. And hopefully our St. Patrick's Day celebrations haven't dulled our senses too much.
No.
Haven't overindulged. And I'm not a big overindulger. My thought is when I hear about St. Patrick's Day and people start talking about the history of it and St. Patrick running the snakes out of Ireland, and I'm thinking, well, according to the history of the island itself, and I'm talking geography,
right?
Yes, at one time, Great Britain and Ireland were connected, but when the seas rose, it was cut off, and there were no snakes in Ireland. So that had to have been more of a metaphor of driving the snakes out, the heathens maybe, I don't know, something along those lines. But I always find those stories interesting, you know?
And they can be really helpful in steering whatever our spiritual thought experiments
yeah.
and explorations are at this yeah. time. What kind of demons are we trying to expel right now on a very personal
yeah.
level? Even if it's just bad habits in our head
yeah.
or bad habits in our daily life, watching too much of the wrong kind of news,
yeah.
you know, that only serves to agitate you.
Yeah. Not a big fan of horror films or real
there,
high
there's
drama
that.
Television
there's that.
Shows, things like
right.
that. I just,
things like that.
There's enough drama in the world as it is.
I've always felt that way.
You know,
yeah.
that I don't need to add more. I don't
right.
need, matter of fact, it was really kind of funny. I shared this with my wife the other day. I was driving the car, and a lot of times I have Spotify. I'll pull up my playlist
right.
for
right.
whatever musician
right.
that I, my favorite musician. I actually have a playlist for Stan Freberg, who is a satirist. Some people
oh.
may know him. He did Dragonette. Scrooge, you know, these satirical things that
uh-huh.
actually came back to bite him back in the 60s and early 70s
Oops.
Because he worked for advertising agencies, and here he was doing this satire that was criticizing the advertising agencies around the holidays.
Oops.
But I started listening to this stuff, and I just started laughing, and it was like, God, I haven't done this in a long time. A, listened to him, and B, had this kind of wonderful laughter.
Yeah. Humor is epically important, and then things that uplift and inspire, things that are calming and soothing, even just crazy stuff. My father was a student of history, and he loved reading biographies because it helped normalize things for him.
Mm.
Even the greatest of humans had their demons that they struggled with.
Yeah.
And so reading people's biographies helped him to understand and make peace with his own, and then watching how people systematically tried to address or suppress
yeah.
their own issues, you know, and how that worked
yeah.
was incredibly informative to him at a day when they didn't have, you know, YouTube and 300 channels on the television.
Exactly.
And but he was a, you know, history
yeah.
repeats itself.
Yeah. And I, by the way, I find that interesting, too. You're mentioning television. Of course, we have on demand. We don't have cable or satellite anymore. And I find it fascinating that even though the prices are much lower than if I was getting cable or satellite, there are still 300 or 3,000 different choices, and I can only watch one at a time, you know. But the thing that I love about it is the fact that I have seen some programming that I never, and I loved seeing it,
right?
That I never would have seen
yeah.
if I hadn't had this ability to scroll through, look at a little
and
description,
choose.
And choose.
Yeah.
Whereas you sit there and you turn the TV on satellite or cable, and you have to let it scroll past you.
Yeah.
You know, you let. So, I mean, we've seen, and I have to say, I recommend this one movie to everybody because it, I think that it sort of it pushes the boundaries of your brain a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie called Upside Down, and the basic premise is there are these two planets. And they are so close together that they're each of their civilizations built towards the other. But each planet has its own gravity.
Interesting.
So you have to get this certain metal, this certain material from one planet and sort of put it in your pocket or in your shoes in order to reverse the gravity of your body so that you can go to the other planet.
Interesting.
And they can see each other. But then there's an underlying love story, and then there's an economic dynamic to it and so forth. But it was so fascinating. And the cinematography and the special effects were wonderful. But just the concept and story were just incredible. And that's why I recommend it, because it's so outside the box that it's to me it was very creative. I'm going, I never would have thought of I mean, how could two planets could just hover there together? What's their orbit like? I mean, they never went into this.
Science fiction, exactly, baby. Exactly. It's awesome.
Exactly. Beth, I thank you again for coming in.
Thank you.
This has been a lot of fun, and I look forward to having you back again soon. Maybe what we can do is planning on having you back here as we go into the summer solstice.
I'd love it. Solstices.
Because we'll have
equinoxes.
A lot of stuff going on then.
Yeah.
I am rooting for a marine layer filled summertime.
I think a lot of people are.
Again, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And a happy St. Patrick's Day and Easter to all of you, Passover, and whatever other holidays you want to celebrate. And until next time, love to Lal.